Hello and welcome to the Death Spell Boost podcast, the official music podcast of the website Surreal Resolution. I'm your host, Robert, and recording a podcast, doing things. And with me, I have...
I am now not the only one to get a shot in the arm, and yeah, we're getting one step closer.
And...
Yeah, I just don't seem so bad. I don't see nothing unusual. Why is Robert talking cat now?
I'm not a cat. I am Morgana. Philistine.
So a cat. Got it.
Motherfucker, do not make me sick of persona on you. trust me, you do not. You know how many hours I plugged into those games. I very well could at this point.
Maybe you should stick Bohemian Rhapsody on him.
You know, that could be an ending theme, if they go for more than one.
Too much money. Way too much money.
How much did the production team for Great Pretender have to shill out for that Freddie Mercury song?
That might have been on Netflix's dime, and that was through an extension of Disney, so, you know, who cares?
Music licensing for anime makes no sense. But whatever, that's for a different podcast. Or is it? Foreshadow. Anyway, here we are, episode 216. How's everything been going with y'all?
Another busy weekend came and went. As evident by my very tired demeanor in the album roundup, I got my second shot last week, and I was kind of out of it the day after, because that's expected. But yeah. By this time next week, I will have everything infused in me, like the heart medicine or some other analogy I can't think of, and I'll be good to keep doing everything as I'm doing right now, because, yeah, I can't trust any of you people out here.
If that ain't people. The biggest mood.
Yeah, people. And speaking of people... Well, time for my annual WrestleMania report. It was an alright show. The first night was much better than the second. And in the music department, there was BB Rexha with a very, I'll just say, not PG outfit for her America the Beautiful performance. I'm not complaining. You had Bad Bunny getting his first pro wrestling win and pulling off some pretty good bumps and moves in the process. So, you know, props to him for putting in the work ethic.
Why?
Because he's a fan and they need good publicity and everybody wins in the end. It was a good match. It was good. It was fun. Yeah, good music on the first night. Second night, though, not as good. We had, well, good idea, Wale. Bad idea, having Wally lip sync because, reasons, I guess. Oh, and there was also this, performance from, let me just see if I can pull up, a name here, because this, as far as wrestling performances go, there's usually, well, there's okay ones and then there are not great ones, but that usually has more to do with the mixing, because music mixing for a live show always stinks. But during the performance of a song, Brutality, the theme for one Rhea Ripley, you had a singer, the name of Ash Costello of New Year's Day. They were playing her to the ring, and said performance was in this cadence all throughout. Da 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 da! Da 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 da! Da 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 da! This is my brutality! No melody, no range. It was good visuals, but the performance was lagging. And I can critique this because, well, this is something that I am actually capable of doing. I may not be able to run the ropes, but I know a good performance when I see it, and I know a bad one, and that was not great.
My only reaction to your simulation of it, if I may quote an old Tenchi Muyo release, this is kind of annoying.
Yeah, it was, and yeah, wasn't great, but yeah, that show came and went, and now it's back to hoping that we can get people back in arenas in a safe manner. You hear that, everybody? You gotta work for it. We ain't there yet. Don't listen to what people in Florida and Texas would have you believe. They know not what they speak. Or they're getting paid behind closed doors. You never knew.
Remember, Ron DeSantis is the only Florida man that can make every other Florida man seem sane by comparison.
Even Marco Rubio and Rick Scott?
Okay, besides two other people.
Yeah, fuck them too.
Anyway,
Wait, that other Florida guy, can he get sued for some shit, or is that one of yours?
Okay, make that three other Florida men then.
Oh yeah, Matt Gaetz. Everyone's favorite butthead Florida man who, should stay away from minors.
Don't make us play the Always Sunny episode. God damn it. Anyway, Mark, what about you?
Well, as I mentioned on the intro, so I got my shot. Well, my first shot. I got the Marder mix. I guess we call it that.
Huh.
And I'm guessing, well, first shot, don't put me, I don't go too hard, but I'm getting my second shot. I'm going to get all that shit, is what I'm guessing.
Here's a tip after the second shot. 2 Tylenol every 6 hours as needed.
Oh.
It helps. Okay. Trust me, it helps.
Okay. And I come in about a month. Which, that's gonna be something. Well, as for us, well, it's been number one, basically work, which I might have more coming up this week because fuck it, because I don't know, because everybody tends to always want to use it for shit. And especially writing off, writing anime stuff, and I would say I would finish writing my own stuff, but I've been distracted with the way due to people who haven't been getting other motherfuckers out. But, yeah.
Ouch. Anyway, as for me, just same as usual, barreling towards the end of the semester, so, that's gonna be fun. Just usual business type stuff. And with that intro stuff out of the way, time to move on to our usual business. Starting, of course, with the new song discussion for the past week. As always, there will be a playlist down in the description, so you can follow along with us, and I'm honestly not sure what you're all going to think of most of these songs, because, kind of a light week for songs per se, but as far as the news, well, you'll see. And by see, I mean we have to open up with The Offspring, who are dropping their newest album this Friday, Let the Bad Times Roll. And we have the last single from the album, before it drops proper, called We Never Have Sex Anymore, and, oh god, the cringe here. This kind of sounds like a bad Offspring parody cover band. Like, with its shuffling tempo, its really low-quality guitar twang in the melodies and rhythms. The cheapest-sounding mariachi horns the band could have possibly gotten their hands on. Seriously, this sounds bizarrely cheap for a band that used to be one of the biggest in the genre, and presumably still have access to, better musical resources to make their sound not as cheap. Trust me, you're gonna notice when you get to that fucking horn solo, which, I swear to god, sounds like they found some, the really cheap, musical instruments that they rent out to, fucking middle schoolers and high schoolers and shit? It sounds like they found one of those, instead of something more better quality. And the fucking saloon ragtime piano doesn't help. Look, we get you're going for the Dia de los Muertos thing, as Crash Thompson put it, but god. And you want to know what's really weird? This doesn't technically have anything to do with the song itself, but when I googled, I searched on YouTube for the song, I found a link to the song itself, and then I found a link a few searches below that said, We Never Have Sex Anymore, music video, no sound. The video description claiming no sound due to copyright, and I didn't know if this was like a fan thing or something, but the video appeared pretty legit. I mean, It's about two monkeys role-playing a romantic couple, presumably the ones that don't have sex anymore. There's clips of the band performing, and they look old and crusty enough that this would have had to have been recorded during this album cycle. But then why would there not be a legal upload by the label on YouTube itself? Where did they post this? Why would they have to, I guess, put it up somewhere that wasn't YouTube? I don't get this. Though I suppose it's more interesting to think about than the friggin' song itself, at the very least.
I'm not sure who asked for this band to cross into the late 90s swing revival sounds of the Cherry Poppin' Daddies, but yeah, this is the wrong kind of grouch rock. I don't want to hear about old married couples not getting laid. I want to hear about how we'll fight through our 100-plus crises at once and come out weaker but stronger in the end. And this, it just, there seems to be a theme and motif with the two tracks we've heard from this album, and that does not bode well for me. So you know what? Count me out on this album. Whatever it's
going to
be.
Guess I'm going to have to take the bullet then.
Yeah, I got no interest in this whatsoever.
Please give me material to riff off of, I beg you. But anyway, let's at least move on to a song that is melodically pleasant, if nothing else. So, what's going on in the camp of Tesseract and Tesseract Accessories?
Well, for something that is more of my style, some of you out there might recall that one of my favorite projects from 2017 was the album Atone from White Moth, Black Butterfly, a more contemporary pop project from singers Jordan Turner and Daniel Tompkins from Tesseract. I love that album, it's fantastic. And they have their third album coming out on May 28th, The Cost of Dreaming. And the first single here, The Dreamer, has a much more electronic flair to it as opposed to, say, Rising Sun from a couple years ago. There's definitely a more synthetic scope to its sound with some backwards reverb and delay starting in the intro before the vocals and the beat kicks in, Jordan on the verses, and Daniel taking lead duties in the chorus. It carries the song all throughout with a very smooth groove to it. Something like this is more my style. And with this album coming out from a spirit of, quote, remote creativity, I'm really curious as to how the rest of it will turn out. There seems to be a good production lineup on here and some pretty cool guest features. So consider me very interested for what they have planned.
I don't know why, but this music video creeped me out far more than it realistically should have. I don't know. It's just every time the vocalists pop, like, turn their head to actually start singing, going from a perfect standstill to motion, just, it kind of feels like watching a horror movie. I mean, the song at least sounds nice, I guess. It's not fully my thing, but, you know, it's got solid melodies and vocals, so can't complain too much. Anyway, moving on to the next track here. So we got a new one here from Tierra Whack, and apparently it was a track that I guess was, like, commissioned by or done in collaboration with the Lego Group, which explains a lot about the tone of the song and the music video itself. The track is called Link, and the beat sounds very, very whimsical, kind of like background music in a really goofy kids show in a way, like Nick Jr. type stuff. And the lyrics are, well, they're about stacking Legos to achieve creative results and, you know, that whole thing. Hell, the music video is basically just, you know, people, presumably Tierra Whack herself and people from an alien civilization building a Lego dragon spaceship to fly through space, and all the sound effects are literally just being, like, mouthed by little kids and stuff. You know, the same kind of kids that absolutely listen to a music artist who once uttered the phrase, titties in his face. Never gets old.
Yeah, this is very, well, I wouldn't say kid, well, maybe sort of kid-friendly, but this one was something, this one is something that will put the kids. It felt like something you would hear from the Lego movie. And consider Lego funded this whole thing out the prize. Another prize that something uses for a Lego movie if there were another one happening, which I don't think it is. But still, but still the concept is cool. It's something that's cool and kind of, you know, kind of charming in a way.
Yeah, Lego Movie, the third part would be nice. Or at least Lego Batman 2. I can't believe they went as far as a Lego Ninjago movie, though.
Yeah, that one was... I didn't care for it.
But this isn't the time to get into that. Anyway, moving on to the next track here. Red Fang. Last time we heard from these guys, they were the absolute closing track, I believe, on the most recent round of the Adult Swim Singles program. Though apparently that was rather abrupt in its run, so... who knows what the last one would have been, but still, they put out a decent track. And, of course, I was expecting, like, maybe they had something in the pipeline for either later that year or this year. And as it turns out, the band has in fact scheduled their newest album for release on June 4th, titled Arrows. And to, you know, coincide with the announcement, we have the release of its title track. And I must point out that the music video is wonderfully goofy. It opens with lead guitarist David Sullivan coming into band practice with a katana sword that apparently was could barely be afforded thanks to a check sent by them from the label for the budget of the music video, which leads to the beautiful exchange. You think Kiss would spend their entire video budget on a sword? Nope. And that's why their videos are idiots. And then you get into the song proper, and this is, you know, your good stoner rock shit. It may not reinvent the wheel in terms of, you know, song structuring or being like some super abstract odyssey, but, you know, it gets the job done very well. The bass is fuzzy and really heavy in the mix. The guitars having that nice cutting tone to them with that almost equal amount of low end. Grooves at a nice pace. It's pretty, no frills, to the point. A good song is a good song. Maybe I have a little bit of a problem with that weird bridge where the vocals sing over this, like, almost kind of like an old-timey musical recording, but it's still a pretty banging track, and I also hope they bring that katana to live shows.
Yeah, this is kind of sludgy and a bit tongue-in-cheek with its video, but at the end of the day, this is just four dudes getting together to jam and swing a katana around. What's not to like about it? And they're also very analog with their sound, and that's a plus for heavy rock nowadays. You don't need samples and amp sims for this. All you need is just good tone, heavy guitars, a little bit of fuzz, and maybe some beers and a katana sword to play around with.
Good times. But now to move on to the opposite of good times. So remember, AFI, for some reason, are coming out with a new album June 11th, the week
after what's called
Bodies, and again, for some fucking reason, we're getting two singles from the album dropped at the same time. That's six so far. Like, why? If you do one more single drop, you're approaching Nickelback territory. Is that your plan here? Are you trying to usurp Nickelback for most singles released off any album at once? Please don't. It's not worth it.
I mean, at least they had the fortune and good common sense to wait until the album was released.
But as for the songs we have here, the first of these two tracks is called Dulceria, which apparently was co-written by William Patrick Corgan. No, wait, I'm sorry. Billy Corgan. You get the undignified name and you're gonna like it. And it just kind of sounds like some super generic, modernized, new wave type stuff. Kind of like what a lot of their stuff's been sounding like lately, but I'll give the song one bit of unironic praise. I do dig the bass guitar work on this, because honestly, it's the only part of the song that kind of sounds like they spent more than 5 minutes writing it out. Other than that, it just, like, repeats and drags, and you just kind of, like, tune out after, like, the halfway point. And then there's the other single, Far Too Near, which I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing, but this is probably the best single we've gotten so far. Maybe because it's the only one that has a legitimate pulse or any semblance of momentum. It kind of sounds like a Sing the Sorrow era B-side or anything. And it still has that weird problem where the guitars feel like they're pushed way too back in the mix to really be enjoyable. Like, again, I get new wave aesthetics can often be like, you know, have that sort of airy etherealness to the guitars, but even then they still had like a presence in the mix, but this still sounds like it's just like the guitars are hiding from the song because they realize what song they're in and they're like, no thanks, we're out.
This album has 11 songs to it. We've heard 6 so far, and it doesn't come out until June.
That's not good.
And it all sounds the exact fucking same. Yeah, one song has a slow tempo, ballady track, and the other has some heavier riffs with more speed and pacing and shorter lengths, but Lottie freaking da, it all just sounds the same. And look, I'm not saying I need to write December Underground 2.0 here, but give me something to work with here. This is half the album we've heard. I've got nothing.
Yeah, just a whole lot of empty calories. And speaking of empty calories, we have one last song here to talk about. So, any of you cool kids on the internet like Doja Cat? Because I don't. Not entirely, anyway. I don't really get her as a meme, and especially less as any kind of legitimate music artist. But apparently we're subjected to her world of music, as she's got a new album due out in the time frame of this summer called Planet Her. And we have the lead single here, Kiss Me More, which has a guest feature from, SZA. SZA, honey, why? You're better than this. And hell, she's kind of...
Are you on the same main...
Yeah, she's like...
Are you on the same main label?
I mean, I know, but like, this is beneath you. Which you can tell because her singing is kind of the only really great part of the song. Like, the only way I can describe this track, it's like... It's like if Say So was also trying to be WAP, but not in a good way. As in, it's got that same kind of weird, modernized, synthetic, retro, disco instrumentation, and SZA's vocals sound great on it, but Doja's got no presence either vocally or lyrically. Like, you know, say what you will about, like, WAP, whether you like Cardi B, Megan Thee Stallion or not, at least you remember it. Like, I'm pretty sure every single one of us can name at least one or two lines from the song right now on the spot without having to think about it. But, like, you know, get him down on his knees, give him something to believe in, or something like that. But, like, I don't remember a damn thing from this. And I only heard this song, like, a couple hours ago. What's the point?
Yeah, I'll say the instrumental is basically what those guys are clockwork, considering you got 5 producers on there. You got people like Tiz himself, Carter Lang, Rojet Shahi, I don't know your fucking name, and somebody named Yeti Beats. Which, okay, not, I can't think of a Yeti making beats. I will say, well, at least it's not produced by recorded genius for the genius page. He's one of the writers of this fucking track. And you should know what I'm talking about. That guy. So, yeah. So aside from, I like Sister's part. I can't really remember much of Doja Cat's part. At least except for the rap she does. I mean, her singing's not obviously singing is kind of meh. I mean, at least the video gave us something to remember. It'd be kind of weird. It's like them find a guy in this weird pink planet. They seduce him with some shit. They lock him up while they playing video games. It's kind of funny. It's kind of funny, but that the song is, I don't really feel it that much.
Yeah, this is nothing. Macaroni in a pot. Look, it's speaks to that song that I can remember more of WAP than I can of this. And aren't you like an internet meme? Aren't you supposed to be good at being remembered by people on the internet? Anyway, that about does it for the new song discussions. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we got news to discuss, so stay tuned. And we're back. Unfortunately, as you could probably guess, we have to open up on the majorly upsetting news of the past week, as we got word over the weekend that after a lengthy hospitalization on life support, Earl Simmons, aka rapper DMX, had passed away from a heart attack at the age of 50. Fuck.
Yeah.
That one, Jesus, that's tough to think about. Like, honestly, when I think about, like, me getting into music for the first time or, like, being cognizant of artists, DMX is probably one of the first ones that comes to mind. Like, it's him, Eminem, and Outkast are the few, like, that are, like, the first music artists I could remember, and just kind of, like, the first celebrities in general. Like, those songs, man, those are his big hits from that era were such defining sounds of, you know, back in the day. Who doesn't love, like, you know, X Gon' Give It To You, or, of course, our national anthem, Stop, Drop, Shut 'Em Down, Open Up Shop. Rough Riders anthem for life, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man. Yeah, like, back in the day, when it's a DMX, you always got this sound that just makes it. It's like the choice you just, the music you use it to make your parents angry. And this is some shit that I can rock the bass. Like, those tracks like Get Me Dog, What's My Name, that you're so riled up. Like, he just gives you that energy, man. Like, DMX has been that guy that's gonna say, I'm gonna get you hyped up with some shit. Like, whether it be songs like We Right Here, or Who We Be, or, there's this one song, I'm a Bang, which I heard, or like, it was on the album The Great Depression. All you heard it in, maybe in some movie that I forgot, but yeah, man, this is,
yeah.
I say that even though great his impact, his music impact is, especially his crossover to the public shit like Party Up in Here, which is, you know, the most popular song you know from him. We all know that DMX, well, unfortunately, has gotten some problems. Personal problems, like with addiction, him trying to get clean and shit. And some other rounds with the law and all that shit, which, I mean, he was trying to get help, he was trying to, you know, find religion, all that shit, which he'd done many times before, but yeah, man. I mean, that didn't, like, we all know his health, whether it be physical or mental, hasn't been turned to a downfall. He did appearance on a versus, the thing versus, right, the one where him was Snoop Dogg in one episode. Just because, like, he's discussing about the addiction, talking about how, you know, there's a big problem with this shit, but how much he was shooting through his childhood, which, yeah, we can tell from, you know, especially when the song Slipping, which is a damn good song, and kind of more sad remembering now. Yeah.
You want to see a display of stage presence and power? Watch his performance at Woodstock 99. You have 100,000 white people being given a complimentary N-word pass throughout that whole concert. It's kind of cringy to watch just in general, but that performance is just had him in the palm of his hand.
Probably one of the few great things to come out of that awful weekend.
Yeah. It really is.
And because a lot of people show their people have giving his flowers when he was still around. But yeah, man, it's such an impact. Like, probably the most heartbreaking RIP messages that I heard is from Dinah Haughton. And those who know who that is, that's Aaliyah's mother. And now thinking about it, I watched Will Must Die like a couple of weeks ago, and wow, I'm kind of more sad now thinking about that one.
Yeah,
it's just,
and I'll say, as an actor, he's gonna be, I enjoy watching some movies with, like, basically that whole trilogy of him doing movies with that one guy who
did Romeo Man Must Die, Marsh. Exit Wounds, Cradle to the Grave. Yeah. God, at least two of those are good.
I mean, I'm not sure which two. I feel weird if I end up saying the one that I liked that you think is the bad one. But God, I remember Cradle to the Grave. That was probably one of the first martial arts or action.
That is a good. That is a good one. Is a good one.
And of course, how X-Men Gypsy was born. People seem to forget about that, or we remember that now. But yeah.
Just sad news all around.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Oh yeah, and there was that song that apparently came out like a couple of hours, like either after or before he passed away. It was like same day, but apparently he did a collaboration that featured one of the guys from Yes.
Really?
Wait, what?
Oh, you didn't hear about that? Yeah, there was like a DMX song that dropped same day he passed. I don't know if that was intentional or not, but
yeah, I think Def Jam was holding on to some stuff. Yeah. I was just going to say that was probably not the best timing in the world.
Yeah.
Like, wait a month at least.
Yeah, wait a month at least.
Yeah.
But, yeah, rest in peace, man. Rest in peace. Now, moving on to slightly less upsetting news. So, director Martin Scorsese has a new film project lined up. It is an adaptation of a novel from 2017 called Killers of the Flower Moon, The Osage Murders and the Birth of the FBI by journalist David Gran with two N's. So, yeah, a novel, you know, about the murders of wealthy Osage people in Oklahoma in the early 1920s. You know, apparently after oil deposits were discovered on their land, you know, it seems like his usual subject matter. And, of course, some of the casting information has come out. You get some of the usual Scorsese suspects like Robert De Niro, Leonardo DiCaprio, and Jesse Plemons. Oh, wait, I misread. Apparently this is an Apple original film, not Netflix, so he's playing multiple sides of the field. And the cast has gained two new members of the music world, specifically musician Jason Isbell and country/rock artist Sturgill Simpson, a resident favorite of all of us here on the podcast. So, yeah. You know.
Okay. Yeah, this is kind of interesting. I mean, granted, I know Sturgill Simpson has been in a couple of movies. Although, I'll be honest, I never saw Queen and Slim, and based on the reaction I got from it, I don't want to see it because I got enough black trauma in my life. Especially since the creator made that fucking show on Amazon Prime, which, yeah, no, not the right time for black trauma.
Yeah.
Wait, is that the new one that came out recently?
Yeah.
Them?
Yeah, them. Yeah, them, like us, except...
The world's still on fire, if you can't tell.
Yeah.
Yeah, guess.
But back to this shit. Kind of just saying, still something going to Scorsese movie. I mean, it ain't the first time I hear a musician going there. I mean, I know Andrew Barnes appeared in that, the last few minutes of the Irishman, but.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Yeah.
I think Scorsese's directed band documentaries in the past. I don't know which but I'm pretty sure he's got a few in his filmography.
Yeah, that's true.
I want to say he did a Rolling Stones one, but I'm not entirely sure.
Seemed like he would do one.
Yeah. But we'll just have to wait and see for more information on that movie. And now for the infrequent, not officially scheduled bit of a Surreal Resolution brand synergy, Decibel Boost, X Podcast ONA, Crossover Go, something. I keep saying words. Anyway, so it's of course the start of April, which means we're a couple weeks into the start of the brand new anime season. I have not gotten a chance to catch up on most of it, but I've heard there's been some pretty interesting offerings here and there. Mars Red in particular seems to be one that catches my attention. And of course, the one that I personally was looking forward to the most this season, the anime adaptation of the Square Enix RPG, The World Ends With You. Hitting with pretty much, you know, the timing that you would expect, given the expanded port that came out on the Switch a few years back. And I think by the time the anime finishes, It'll be just in time for the announced sequel game, Neo: The World Ends With You, to come out. You know, pretty convenient timing. And I actually did watch the first episode, like, earlier, as in I finished watching 10 minutes before we started recording, and I could say, pretty good stuff. You know, it's got a really great style, and even if it kind of has the same sort of problem of janky CG incorporating against 2D that Persona 5 the animation did, at least The World Ends With You has much better visual direction to its action sequences than Persona 5 the animation. Look, I like Persona 5, but I have problems with that adaptation. Anyway, and of course, one of the most hyped aspects of the show going into the airing was the fact that it was going to feature an OP courtesy of one of the new rising superstars of anime OP music, Ali. Which, you know, is to be expected. When your very first single as a band is a song that bangs as hard as Wild Side does, you're destined for great things in life. And of course, we can't forget they're also pretty good ED for motherfucking Jujutsu Kaisen, the new Shonen Jump hotness. Look, maybe I'll watch it someday. I'm behind on a lot of things.
It was alright. It was alright.
It'll probably get a Toonami run at some point. But we got this weird bit of news that just a few days before the anime was set to premiere, they were going to have to change OPs. And we already had an inkling of what the original OP titled Teenage City Riot was going to sound like. It sounded pretty good. It sounded like it would fit the very musically focused vibe and aesthetic of the game pretty well. And I imagine there's got to be a hell on whoever the hell has to actually edit that OP together, because they probably wrote the song to sync up with the visuals and vice versa. So what the hell happened? Someone in the band got arrested, apparently. Yeah, the Tokyo Metropolitan Police Department arrested drummer Kahadio, real name Kadio Shirai, on April 4th, and here's the thing, it's not for the reason you'd probably suspect. Like, I've gotten used to, whenever a Japanese pop cultural figure gets arrested, whether it's an actor, a manga artist, a voice actor, etc., it's usually either one of three things: child pornography, sexual misconduct, or cocaine. How you doing, Pierre Taki? But no, apparently this wasn't either of those things. Apparently the drummer was arrested on some kind of bank refund scam where, okay, here's to quote from ANN as it describes it, quote, "In recent years, Japanese police have been investigating a rash of, quote, refund scams. In these scams, suspects pose as officials and promise government refunds to unsuspecting victims if they withdraw cash from ATMs or provide their ATM cards to the suspects." Huh.
I know being in a band doesn't pay much nowadays, but that doesn't mean you have to resort to bank fraud.
I'm surprised they would even have to. I thought they would have gotten, like, decent payouts and royalties for usage of that song. Well, songs, rather.
Yeah. Let's just say that will never match what, you know, actual hard sales will do, because lest we bring up the whole argument regarding Spotify again.
Oh, boy.
Ah, right. Fucking Daniel Ek is a chill. Yeah.
And unless you're a big name like, you know, Lisa, and you're actually getting actual download sales, yeah.
Yeah, so.
In other words, you get Jack Diddley shit.
But, like, I that's really a thing where people are like, isn't that kind of like doing the whole Nigerian Prince thing IRL? Like, if you actually ran into someone on the street who said, "I'm a Nigerian prince, I can promise you all this money, you just have to give me this."
Pretty much, yeah. Only much more direct.
Points for effort, I guess, but,
great.
You know, you kind of get caught eventually with those things.
Yeah. Let's just be glad, though, that this is a white-collar crime and not, you know...
Yeah, Lisa's not the other shit. Yeah. Which, it still sucks because he bought an edgy mate and a couple of fire songs on anime, like Beastars Have Aspired. You caught him, that was good. And, oh, shit, Nobleless, that was shit, never mind. I mean, it's still good, but fuck that anime.
I never saw it, and I feel like I should be glad I haven't seen it.
You missed nothing.
You missed jack shit.
All right, noted. But, yeah, so who knows how soon they'll be able to replace a drummer and get back to, I don't know, making the next great anime banger for 2022. We shall see. But we have one last news topic to discuss here, and it is the big one, as it is the annual time of year where the list is out. Record Store Day 2021, which is, much like last year, occurring across 2 days, specifically June 12th and July 17th. So, yeah, you have 2 whole days to go out and try to get yourself some things, but the releases are going to be split pretty much evenly across, like, both days, as in one day you'll get one batch of releases available, and the other day you'll get the other, which kind of made it hard to sort through this list, because the way I usually do it is I try to organize the ones that I think are interesting into RSD first, RSD exclusive, and RSD limited run / regional focus. But the goddamn organizational tool on the site only let me organize it by date.
Yeah, I think that's to make it less clunky for people who are trying to determine when to go for what or something.
Yeah, I guess.
Really, these are all just semantic labels anyway, so you know, I don't think it's going to matter that much in the long run.
Yeah, so what I'm going to try and do is I have mine organized pretty much by date, so all the stuff that I think is interesting from June 12th versus all the stuff I think is noteworthy from July 17th. I'll probably go through all the June 12th stuff first, pause, see if there's anything I missed. You know, well, I assume
yeah.
Stuff you covered as well, and then we'll dive into July 17th. Alright, so, June 12th. Some of the more noteworthy ones being offered here. AC/DC, Through the Mists of Time / Witch's Spell, a 12-inch picture disc featuring 2 songs from their most recent album, Power Up, limited to 5,000 copies. And given these sales records from that album, those could sell out fast. I'm amazed people still buy AC/DC albums. Holy shit. Anyway, there's then the Beastie Boys with Aglio e Olio, a 180-gram clear vinyl of their 1995 EP, which threw back to their hardcore punk roots, 11,000 copies. We're getting a couple of picture discs from Ronnie James Dio's run in Black Sabbath, 4,000 copies of Mob Rules coming out on the 40th anniversary, and Heaven and Hell, also 4,000 copies, both apparently having remastered audio, so hey, neat. From John Carpenter and Dave Davies, we have the original motion picture soundtrack to 1995's Village of the Damned. And apparently this is going to be somewhat interesting because this is a full version of a soundtrack that evidently had to be not only mixed differently, but heavily truncated for the sake of the original film. This will be coming out, you know, double LP, 2,000 copies. It'll come with, like, liner notes and classic film stills pressed on an Orange Haze vinyl. Interesting. From Sarface and the late MF Doom, we have the single Metal with Metal, 1,500 copies on a 3-inch vinyl, with a collector's poster and a sleeve and everything. Don Davis, The Matrix, The Complete Edition, a 3-LP release, 2,500 copies, pressed on glitter-infused green vinyl, includes some classic film stills, and even an interview with the composer himself. Interesting. From Deftones, they are putting out a 12-inch picture disc that contains 2 remixes that actually did not make the Black Stallion CD release, those being remixes of Digital Bath by Televon Tel Aviv and Faithy Seta by Arca. 8,500 copies. Again, if you're looking for a way to enjoy Deftones guilt-free, eh, you can do worse. For the band Electric Wizard, we have Time to Die, a double LP, 3,000 copies of their 2014 album, pressed on dark green vinyl, along with some altered cover art as well. Freddie Gibbs and Madlib, Pinata, the 1984 version, LP, doesn't give a set copy limit, but hoo boy, is that artwork aggressively 80s. magnificent.
Oh, I gotta see this.
Yeah, it kind of looks like background decoration in, like, GTA Vice City. It's great. From the composers Harry Gregson-Williams and John Powell, Shrek, original motion picture score, 2,000 copies on slime green vinyl.
Oh, boy.
You always gotta have the dankness, man. The dankness! Although I know that's one vinyl the AVGN won't be buying. From Eason, we have his third solo album After, coming out, you know, on a double LP limited to 2,500 copies. It'll be a double colored vinyl set. The first LP will be a black and white swirl, and the second will be solid pink. From the band Integrity, we have Cradle to the Grave, no relation to the movie. This is a 7-inch vinyl limited to 700 copies, which features covers of two songs by Motorhead, Cradle to the Grave and Orgasmatron, on limited black and blue vinyl. Yeah, Orgasmatron. Which I honestly thought was the name of that baseball movie by the South Park guys.
No.
Anyway, Lady Gaga, Chromatica, coming out 11,000 copies on translucent yellow vinyl with a 28-page book, a collectible zine, and a bunch of images and artwork. From Lamb of God, we have their third studio album, As the Palace Burns, 3,500 copies on red splatter vinyl. From Linkin Park, we have Meteora, coming out on a double LP, 8,500 copies on blue vinyl. Piers... one I wasn't expecting. From popular nerdcore rapper Mega Ran, we have his album Mega Ran 9, limited to 500 copies, with new album art by tattoo artist Inksworth. If that means something to you, I don't know. I have never listened to Mega Ran, so I don't know what to say. From the guys in Motley Crue, there's a 40th anniversary cassette box set. 5 cassettes, 1,750 copies total, which features their albums Too Fast for Love, Shout at the Devil, Theater of Pain, Girls, 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 and Dr. Feelgood. So you could just get that and pretend that most of the stuff that came afterwards didn't happen. From Motorhead, we have their 1981 collaborative EP with the band Girls School titled St. Valentine's Day Massacre. 4,000 copies on a picture disc for the 40th anniversary. Nice. There are a bunch of 10 Trix Point Never vinyls that are coming out on June 12th. So specifically, each one of these is 1,200 copies, and in order we have his 2013 compilation The Fall Into Time on transparent olive color vinyl, his second full-length album Zones Without People from 2009 on transparent purple vinyl, Betrayed in the Octagon, his debut album from 2007, on crystal clear colored vinyl. His third full-length album from 2009, Russian Mind, on metallic silver color vinyl. And another one of his compilation albums, Drawn and Quartered, on off-white colored vinyl. That's a lot of Lopatin.
That is a lot of OPN, jeez.
Yes, there's a lot of it. There's a lot of it.
Good luck trying to get all of it at once.
Also, I didn't know he was. It was only Missing Summer.
Oh yeah,
I didn't.
I guess they needed something to put out now that a certain artist is out of work for reasons.
Yeah.
From the guys in Opeth, we have a vinyl release of their second full length album, Morning Rise. Double LP. I didn't see a copy limit, but it will be coming out on translucent turquoise vinyl. Nice.
Mm-hmm.
We have a live release from Rage Against the Machine, The Battle of Mexico City. Double LP, 12,350 copies, so this one will be plenty available, documenting their first ever performance in Mexico at the Palacio de los Deportes in Mexico City in, I think, 2001? I forgot. I think I jotted down the date wrong here, but yeah, either way, that's going to be interesting, and it's coming out on red and green vinyl with a white label, like the Mexican flag. Nice. From rapper Schoolie D, we have The Real Hardcore, a 12-inch vinyl of a single that he's recorded alongside Ice-T, with additional accompaniment from Chuck D and even DJ Starscream, a.k.a. Sid Wilson of Slipknot fame. Available in, quote, four smoked-out colors. Whatever that means. From Toon Yards, we have their second full-length album, Who Kill, 3,500 copies on a multicolor splatter vinyl. And from various artists, we have the soundtrack to Lara Croft Tomb Raider.
Yeah, early 2000s, what up?
2,500 copies, double LP in a metallic golden triangle vinyl, lined with production stills and everything.
Wait, did they have music like, I think, Outkast?
Let's take a quick look. We have Nine Inch Nails, Missy Elliott, Outkast, Nobody Cares Moby.
Yeah, that is a very early 2000s.
Yeah.
But that's basically about where my things of note end for June 12th. I assume there's probably stuff you think is interesting that I missed.
Well, I got a couple more on here. There is a release from the Chemical Brothers just called TBC. So I guess they're going to release something in June. I guess. Kind of weird, but yeah. We also have a picture disc re-release of the third album from The Cure, Faith. It's 40th anniversary, 8,000 copies. Looks to be a pretty good release. We have from Emerson, Lake & Palmer a picture disc, 3,500 copies, Tarkus. It's the ELP album.
Ah.
Yeah. I will be very much in for that, because, Tarkus, it's wild. We also have, apparently there's a new album from Garbage coming out, No Gods, No Masters, 2,700 copies, looks to be cool, I think, and I guess this is definitely for someone, because Haim has a 7-inch single, Gasoline, 4,500 copies, and the B-side features Taylor Swift.
Why?
Something white girl,
I don't know why. But in more interesting, as a more interesting single release, Who, I think you know who is. They're the group that did the really weird and cool cover of Sad But True. I think that's who they are. I could be mistaken. But anyway, they have that coming out as a single, 2,200 copies. Should be interesting. All right. And then, because I know there's a lot of old people who go to this stuff, Jefferson Airplane, they have Acid, Incense, and Balloons, RSD, Collected Gems from the Golden Era of Flight, 3,000 copies. It is a curated compilation and release. Because, you may as well get a little weird with it. We have two releases from 90s prog rock group King's X. We have Tapehead, their 2000 album. And we have Please Come Home, Mr. Bulbous, their first ever, one of their first time on vinyl is what I'm trying to say. I got in the years wrong, but anyway, 2,000 copies each. Should be cool. Doug Pinnick has a great voice. From the Notorious B.I.G., Biggie Duets, The Final Chapter, 4,550 copies. His second posthumous album with duets, and should be good. Also coming out is a bit of a... I think it's a new Unearth release. Oh, no, I'm thinking of something else. There was something else that came out, but we'll talk about that some other time. Bit of an underrated gem, as it says here, from Prince, The Truth. It'll be coming out on vinyl. 13,000 copies. This should be pretty plentiful. Mm. First time ever on vinyl. Very, very interesting era for Prince. It's always cool to check out. All right, I got a couple more here. From Tears for Fears. Live at Massey Hall. 3,500 copies. Concert from Canada in 1985. If you love your 80s new wave stuff, this is up your alley. Same if you're into more atmospheric 70s electronic music. From Tangerine Dream, live at the Reims Cathedral, recorded in December of 1974. 6,000 copies. Yeah, pretty wild. And because I just had to throw this in here, from the Tom Tom Club. You know, it's the song, it's the band that does that song that, in that one episode of Always Sunny, where Dennis says, I'm done. I'm going to go be a dad. That's the song they're dancing to. It's from Tom Tom Club.
Oh.
We have The Good, The Bad, and The Funky. Their fifth and last studio album, making its final debut, 2,000 copies.
Interesting.
Who is this? This is a pretty loaded lineup we've got here, but we're only halfway there.
Yeah. Then we have July 17th, which, not going to lie, there was a lot less that stood out to me. I'm sure there's probably more that stood out to you, but this is why we're both here. So, starting right at the top, from Yes guitarist John Anderson, the 45th anniversary edition of his solo album Elias of Sunhillo, 1,200 copies on 180 gram LP. Apparently a new remaster of the original album, so hey, interesting. Another one from John Carpenter, this time the original motion picture soundtrack for the film Ghosts of Mars. A soundtrack that apparently features the likes of Steve Vai, Buckethead, Robin Fink, who's played for Nine Inch Nails, and even the entire lineup of Anthrax, minus Joey Belladonna.
I remember that.
That's wild.
I remember that fucking score. I remember that movie as well, which, oh boy, I... Oh boy, that was not a good movie. I still enjoyed it, but that was not a good movie.
Yeah, I'd never watched it, so I wouldn't say, but it is coming out 2,200 copies on a Red Planet LP. Interesting. From Denzel Curry and Robert Glasper, we have Live from Lamer Park, a 7-inch picture disc, 2,500 copies of a live performance from an LA neighborhood of the same name in fall of 2020. From Sarface, we have a project called Sar Noir, which is apparently both a comic book and a vinyl soundtrack to that comic. 400 copies on a Dark Side and Light Side LP. From Dio, we have God Hates Heavy Metal, a 12-inch picture disc of a song that was originally featured as a bonus track on the Japanese edition of his 1996 album Angry Machines. That's going to be 3,500 copies. Interesting. From Fallujah, arguably the most overrated of a contemporary technical death metal, we have their 2011 debut album, The Harvest Wombs. 1,000 copies on deep green and black burst vinyl. You know, it's probably going to look like an alien sickness. So, you know, you kids will like it. From God Forbid, we have the album Determination. For its 20th anniversary, its first ever vinyl release, coming out 1,000 copies. From Gorillaz, we have the G Collection. Only 980 copies for this one, but it's a vinyl box set that contains the entirety of their main discography up to this point in time, including the most recent Song Machine Season 1. That's probably going to fetch a hefty, hefty price tag.
Yeah.
From Judas Priest, we have Best Of, a release of theirs originally from 1978, a double LP, 2,000 copies on clear black and gold splatter vinyl, with, you know, the tracks from the original edition and a band interview on side four. Here's an interesting one, the 30th anniversary edition of Mr. Hood from the rap group KMD, you know, featuring the man that we would all come to know as MF Doom. 2,000 copies on a tricolor pressed double LP. And then from Mastodon, we have Fallen Torches, a 12-inch picture disc of the track of the same name from their 2020 release, Medium Rarities. 6,500 copies. From composer Ennio Morricone, we have The Blue-Eyed Bandit, the original motion picture soundtrack, 1,800 copies on blue vinyl, of a film from, I think, 1980 or 1981 that apparently was composed in more of a jazz style as opposed to, you know, what we normally know as output for. And then the last one that I thought was interesting here, from various artists, we have a tribute to Curtis Mayfield, a double LP, 3,000 copies, which features tributes to his music from the likes of Gladys Knight, Steve Winwood, Lenny Kravitz, Bruce Springsteen, the Isley Brothers, B.B. King, Stevie Wonder, and many, many more. So, yeah, maybe not as much that caught my attention on the second day, but, you know, they can't all be singers.
Yeah, okay. Well, I got a couple more here that are at least kind of interesting, depending on your definition of interesting. How about a solo project from Matt Bellamy of Muse? Because he has one, Cryosleep, 1,500 copies, a picture disc, and I don't know what to think about it.
I could not be less interested.
Well, maybe you'll be more interested in this, because from Bjork, with Bjork X the Hamralid Choir, a 12-inch vinyl release, 3,000 copies. I believe this was something that she put together. Yeah, it says here, put together early November 2020, teamed up with a choir to record Cosmogony. I hope I said that right. Yeah, that'll be interesting. It's a 12-inch single, so it'll be pretty cool. All right, I guess I'll go to the next page. From Dire Straits, we have Encores. It is a live EP following their 1993 live album On the Night. It is a 45 RPM 12-inch EP, transparent pink vinyl, 5,000 copies. Looks to be pretty cool. Something I'm very interested in here is from Evanescence, The Open Door, 15th anniversary reissue, gray marble vinyl, 2 LP set, 2,500 copies. Very underrated album. I'm just going to say that. I really like it. And for all of the scenecore kids out there, from first to last, Dear Diary, My Teen Angst Has a Body Count.
Oh.
Yep, it's the debut album featuring this one guy named Sonny Moore. Wonder if he ever did anything else. From all the way back in 2004. But, original mixes, remastered, 2,000 copies. Exclusive color pressing should be interesting. Here's another soundtrack that everybody should get. A picture disc soundtrack to The Iron Giant from Mr. Michael Kamen.
Ah, interesting.
Oh.
Yeah. The older we get, the more we realize that is such a fantastic movie. And Warner Brothers, please watch the movie again. You all clearly don't know it. But we'll deal with that when we deal with that. Okay. Now
they're using y'all just to point.
Yeah, okay. But moving on. How about something kind of fun? From Mr. Big. Lean Into It, the second album from them, and yes, it is the one that has To Be With You as the closing track. Only 500 copies on this release. So if you want to get it, get it. So it's going to be a pretty quick seller.
Yeah.
And coming to us from Pearl Jam, we have Alive. It is a single being released on cassette and on 12-inch vinyl. The vinyl has a beat, has an etching on side B. And, the cassette has 6,300 copies. The vinyl, 18,500. Pretty plentiful. In the realm of comedy, though, from Richard Pryor, we have Richard Pryor, a self-titled picture disc release, 1,300 copies, featuring some fantastic bits like Super N, Girls, Farting, Prison Play, TV Panel Show, Smells, Army Life, and Frankenstein. All right. From St. Vincent, this is something we should be expecting in the next little while. She is releasing a 7-inch covers double single with a cover of the Nine Inch Nails track Piggy featuring Dave Grohl on drums and a cover of Metallica's Sad But True.
Oh.
I'm sensing a theme here, or a pattern, or a trend, and I'm not sure what exactly it is, but, okay, sure. All right, and finally here, something very strange, even for this guy, a 3-inch vinyl single, direct from the people at Record Store Day, from Weird Al Yankovic, Beat on the Brat. Produced by John Caffiero, who has been a longtime collaborator for The Misfits and The Ramones.
Oh.
Early Weird Al. Yeah. I couldn't tell you anything else. We're just going to have to find it. 1,500 units. They're very tiny. Hope you have the right player to play it. Yeah, this was a mouthful. Whew.
Yeah, just stuff everywhere. You know, it is what it is. Maybe there'll be a bit, things will flow a bit more smoothly. I have no idea how it went during the last Record Store Day, because I did not leave the house.
I did Black Friday. The one I went to, it was pretty smooth. The wait was kind of long, because you can only have so many people in a small building at any given time, but I would expect by summer we're going to have our shit together a little bit more, so that way we'll be able to do this, you know, properly.
Fingers crossed. But with that massive list out of the way, time to move on to the last bit of discussion here, and that is the new album releases for the week of April 16th, 2021. Starting at the top, we have the unfortunately delayed, but now technically here almost, Liquid Tension Experiment 3 from Liquid Tension Experiment. We have the newest album from Cannibal Corpse with Violence Unimagined. The Armed finally coming out with their new album, Ultra Pop. We have a new EP from August Burns Red with The Guardians Sessions. A new album from metalcore band While She Sleeps with Sleeps Society. Escape the Fate, for some reason, with a new album called Chemical Warfare. Shelly, formerly known as Drom, dropping a new self-titled project this weekend. There's a new project from Conway the Machine called La Machina, as always. From producer Andy Stott, we have Never the Right Time. From Ted Mosby, for some fucking reason. Yeah, actor Josh Radnor has a new solo album coming out this weekend called One More Then I'll Let You Go. As previously mentioned, we unfortunately have the newest album from The Offspring with Let the Bad Times Roll. And even more unfortunately, we have the newest full-length album from Greta Van Fleet with The Battle at Garden's Gate. But with that out of the way, it is time to clean house and get the hell out of here. So, Alex, where can they find you on the internet?
As always, Aura of Azure, where I just sort of lurk around and pop in when necessary and tell you all that used game prices are getting way too friggin' high. It's just bleh.
Blah. Mark, what about you?
On Twitter, I'm at the media where I say, if you make popcorn salad, you are a fucking idiot. Okay, I should say that, but okay, you're not an idiot, but you have... Why would you make something? Why you make soggy ass popcorn?
I do not know.
And of course, on my site, mindhaveronewhatwhatwhatwhatwhat.com, where of course, that being April, I finish all my you know seasonal anime first impressions. Seeing what's good, what's bad, what's bullshit, what's good. I want to say this. Yeah, watch the new Megalobox. It's kind of depressing, but interesting to go into.
That too. Yeah, I do gotta watch that. Anyway, as for me, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, etc. at Rob Barracuda. Email me, roberts@surrealresolution.com for questions, comments, concerns, and inquiries. New audio-only episodes go up every Wednesday. Video usually goes up, you know, by the weekend, so subscribe on the channel. Hit the bell tab so you're notified whenever anything goes up there. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, @SurrealReso. Like us on Facebook. Visit the website, surrealresolution.com, for written articles, this podcast, podcast O&A, all that fun business. Be sure to jump into our Discord chat so you can share your escapades for PS3 game hunting. And, of course, shout out to the producer, Mr. E, for graciously letting me use his music for this podcast. Links to his shit down in the description. Well, that'll about do it for this week. We'll, of course, be back next week with more news, new songs, and nonsense. So, until then, doing things. Curse you, Crash.